All
Okay.
right. So tonight I've invited someone that I know from other meetings, but particularly the Wednesday night Santa Barbara meeting that I've been attending now for a few years. We've done service together there, and just a very solid member of the fellowship, and also just a cool person to know. So I'd like to introduce Sunny.
Thank you very much, Bridget. And yeah, it's actually almost 5 years with that Santa Barbara meeting. And as far as the time, it was probably appropriate because there's a World Series game that just finished before the meeting started. Of course, not so good news for New Yorkers, but for LA. Okay, Sonny, alcoholic and addict of mind-altering substances. I'll try not to be too long. You've probably heard a lot of this before. But I'm going to start with my very beginning as a user because it's something that's a little different than some of the convention. Okay, I started using in high school, actually. I was a junior. I quit the football team. I got a job in Manhattan, which I could do since I was living in Flushing, New York. I could take the subway to work. But one of the other high school guys he lived in the South Bronx and he was dealing. And all of a sudden, I had access to probably some of the best quality weed available in New York City in the 60s. And what that did for me, all of a sudden, with the weed I had access to, I had friends coming over. I got invited to parties. I had a booming social life. I had a high school girlfriend that even some of my friends were jealous of. I had gotten invited to parties in other neighborhoods of people who would get high, you know, and the point of that was, in my old age, looking back, I recognized that my later high school years and early college might have been the happiest time of my life. I had an easy job. I had no challenge in school. I was getting high every day and a booming social life. And my using did that for me. I wasn't running away from pain. I wasn't hiding from it. I was having what turned out to be what, in perspective, was some of the best time of my life. Now, I had no sense of responsibility either, but and ultimately, too, with a few years as I got older, it started catching up with me. And when I had to leave New York. I left my social life behind, left my girlfriend, left my access to drugs. And at that point is when I turned to alcohol as the available alternative. And I still, though, you know, had the attitude of somebody who can party every day and is entitled to it. And ultimately, when I moved to Denver, I hung out with the wrong crowd. I ended up, I don't like the word blessing because that has religious connotations, but I was fortunate to spend a week in Adams County Jail on a charge of felony burglary, trying to rob a veterinarian of some of the drugs they have there for animals. And like I say, it was fortunate for me because at that point, I was forced to confront the fact that I was going to graduate to prison if I kept pursuing the same type of lifestyle I had done previously. And again, I was fortunate. I had a good probation officer. I took it seriously, and I had to recognize the fact that I needed to change. I needed to seek out people with positive goals and cut loose the toxic buddies I was hanging with and drop their values. So, and I was in my early 20s. I ended up finishing the apprenticeship program I was in. I went back to college, this time taking it seriously. And I was living a good life, but again, I was living it clean and sober. I had a relationship with somebody who I also who had positive goals. So my life was had gotten, you know, from the after the probation, I had 4 pretty good years. But then, as I was successful in school, my ego started to build and I started drinking. So my final year there, I was drinking. At that point, drinking, that inflated, that gave me the nice alcoholic ego. So I thought, well, I could be a playboy. I don't need a relationship. So I let go of a relationship that was pretty solid. And I moved on, I guess, to grad school in El Paso, but that was also something fortunate for me because in El Paso, none of the grad students drank, none of them did drugs. I spent the next 2 years there clean and sober, and they were probably my two most successful years in my college education, the grad school experience I had there. Again, without getting no drugs, no drinkers, you know, just, you know, people might have one beer at one time, but nothing, nobody who planned their life around getting high there. In fact, they were serious. They're all goal oriented, and I followed their model, and I had some good success there. I actually did some real science and things. Unfortunately for me, my next stop was grad school in Irvine, California. And the first thing I discovered there is my office mate was a chemistry grad student, and he had a formula. He was making MDMA and methamphetamine. And some of the professors had alcohol parties once a week where the only alcohol there was ice cold vodka, and there was lots of it. And anyway, all of a sudden, my grad, I was drinking every day. I had access to, at least it was quality methamphetamine. It wasn't like the stuff they have on the streets these days. It didn't have the side effects because it was made pure, but at that point, ultimately, I ended up a transfer to. I was able to do, I had some success in school, but I also had failures, stupid failures, because I was busy. I was getting high. I was drinking. I didn't follow through on things. I didn't study for an exam and I failed. Wow, what a shock. You know, cold, clean and sober, I would have known better, but I didn't care. And I moved on. I had some success in grad school, but ultimately, I've become a functional user. I did get a degree, and I did get a job, and I got married and started a family. And fortunately for me, I had no drug connections at that point. So I just drank every day after work. I at least was the type of allergy I had for alcohol. I could stop after one bottle of wine. I don't have to drink until I'm totally wasted. Yeah, I could drink till I'm drunk, but I didn't usually do that. I could stop, and that allowed me to go to work without a hangover the next day and be functional until I got home, and then I could drink. And again, I didn't think I had a problem because I was a functional user. Drank every night for about 35 years, no problem. Never got a DUI, never had an issue at work over that. But I did have, I was an alcoholic. When I ended up in rehab for a pill addiction, where I was buying pills over the counter in Mexico, I saw that I qualified with those 25 questions for alcoholism. So I can say I was an alcoholic, honestly. Even though my bottom wasn't so low, I was functional. But when I hit rehab, that was another fortunate thing for me. I was very angry. I didn't think I belonged there. I thought my wife was sending me there to get me divorced. But when I opened my eyes, listened to the nurses, the counselors, my brothers in recovery, I recognized the fact that I belonged there. That's the first time I ever saw the steps. And I saw step one, and I recognize the fact that I have an incurable mental illness called addiction. That's how I describe it. And that's kind of describes the way it's functioned for me all my life. It's incurable, and I'm going to have it till I die. And all the time I was functional, I was in denial. I was lying to myself. The addiction was controlling me. I wasn't controlling it. And after I accepted my first step, I was never religious, and I wasn't religious in rehab either. The words God didn't bother me there. But I saw step two, power greater than myself. I said, damn, I need to learn how to recover. If I'm going to control this addiction, I have to learn a bunch of new stuff. And at that point, the power greater than me became what I still call my recovery team. My brothers and sisters who are going through the same issues every day like I am. Adjusting, I had to adjust my values to, instead of, I had to, my step four part was controlling negative impulses. When I was functional user, I was negative all the time. I was very comfortable with it. Why not? It gave me an excuse to get high. I was very comfortable looking for the bad things that occur and using it to justify my attitude. To control my addiction, I have to let go of the negative stuff, especially the negative stuff that's out of my control. I can't do a damn thing about it, and getting high is not going to be a good answer for it. Second thing I had to do is control my self-centeredness. As a functional user, I was aggressively self-centered in most of the things I did. In recovery, I felt gratitude for maybe the first time in my life. I had a lot of good things, but I didn't appreciate them. I took them for granted. I had an attitude of entitlement, like I deserved it. Yeah, I might have deserved some of the things that were good, but again, it wasn't, I also had to appreciate the help I had gotten from people and situations. And this is that these are the lessons of recovery. And first and foremost, too, was my wife of already by 33 years. She had put up with so much crap from me. But I said, ah, so what? No. Once I started trying to practice the steps, I recognized that I owe her amends, and I owe her amends every single day for the rest of my life for all the shit that she put up with. And it wasn't an instant change. I had some early recovery. I had some bad temptations, but right now, the reason I've been able to last a couple of weeks ago, I had my fifth anniversary. That's because I've been controlling them. I have to do service every day, service to myself, service to my family, my community, and my brothers and sisters in recovery, who I need to visit at least once a day to keep in mind I have this incurable disease and to listen and learn about how I could control it each and every day. And if I could be of any service to them, that's even better. But again, that's a challenge each day. I have to keep that in mind. I can't take off from that. If I want to watch a football game, I can't skip a meeting. The only legitimate excuse I see for skipping a meeting where I have a commitment, which are just about all of them, is if I have something I have to do with family. If I have to take my son to a dentist, that I can miss a meeting for that. But like I said, football game, no. Going out to to do some type of chore, no. The meeting has to be a priority. It's an important priority because it's part of the service I have to do to myself to keep clean and sober. And the last thing I'll mention about that is the other thing I was fortunate is after I accepted my first step, I saw I better take recovery seriously. It wasn't casual, it wasn't a joke. I saw that I had to listen and learn and practice it seriously. It wasn't something casual. I wasn't thinking a relapse isn't a viable option for me. A relapse would pro in fact, a full relapse would probably kill me at this point in my life. Even though being clean and sober for 5 years, I'm probably the healthiest I've been. I'm not awaiting any surgeries. I don't take anything for pills. I don't take anything for sleep. I don't take anything for anxiety, the type of stuff which I used to hound my doctor about. No, no more. That's one of the my fortunes from being clean and sober. And I must be grateful for that. And I'm grateful for you for being patient listeners, especially the ones who I know might have heard this story before. Thank you for letting me speak.